Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is episode 329 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm James, back this week, joined by Ryan, and stepping in for Paul, we've got Spencer Michaelis. Spencer, how have you been since the last time you were on the show?
It's been a while, I think. But
yeah, it's been a minute.
Generally, I've been pretty good since then. A lot of baseball, a lot of coaching, and yeah, it's just been baseball pretty much 24/7 when I'm not working. So it's been good.
Well, we want to get a plug in here right away because yeah. You've launched a new podcast here. So yes. Tell us about that.
Yep. Jack Stern of Brewer Fanatic, who formerly of Brew Crew Ball, me and him are doing a podcast called the Brewer Fanatic Podcast. We're three episodes in, should be releasing every Friday morning. And yeah, it's just Jack and I have gotten to know each other over the last 4 years, I guess, working together at Wisconsin Lutheran College on our baseball stuff. He's been a stats and analyst guy for us while I've been the pitching coach. So yeah, it's fun. I mean, we're like I said, three episodes in, so we're kind of getting used to it, still getting the hang of things and getting into a rhythm. But yeah, I would definitely check it out.
Definitely worth checking out too. Two great minds getting together there and you know, just add it to your Brewers listening every single week. So when can people find new episodes?
That'll be every Friday morning is the plan.
There we go. So you know, this typically drops on Monday morning, and then by Friday you're yearning for some more Brewers content, so you got Spencer's and Jack's podcast there as well.
Yes, thank you for staggering it that way. I appreciate exactly. That yes, that was great.
It was planned.
Yes,
exactly.
And speaking of Friday, we are also planning, Spencer and I, on launching our first minor league extra of this era. So we're going to be recording that if everything goes to plan. I still got to check on a couple things, but I think we're going to be recording it this Friday. So be on the lookout for questions for that and also then the episode itself to follow.
Absolutely. Good time to mention you should go to patreon.com/MKETailgate to sign up there. $2 a month. You get question priority on this podcast as well as reporting as eligible. $5. That level gets you that minor league extra podcast with Spencer and Ryan, and as well as Paul's reporting as eligible mini pods. So, you know, Paul's been really busy running up to Packers draft. So check out some of that content as well. I know he's been doing a lot of mini pods leading up to the draft. Definitely worth listening to those before we get. Is it this week already that the draft starts?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
And also, you should check out Paul's article, which is one of the best things ever written on this yeah. The subject of drafts generally, which is it was on Acme Packing Company, and it was just entitled "You're Really Bad at Draft Analysis." Yeah, you.
Yes, and everybody is. Yeah.
It's perfect. Yes, it's absolutely perfect because, yes, this is why I do love the baseball draft compared to the football draft, because the ratio of people that pretend to know things about the football draft versus actually know things is terrible, and the ratio over on the baseball side is much better. So I love it when somebody's just like, yeah, we really don't know. We're most of us are just guessing here. So I love it when you get that perspective on things. It's great.
Or at least with baseball, it takes longer, so you can fool people into thinking you know what you're talking about longer. Spencer's nodding his head. So yeah, exactly.
Yes.
All right. Definitely worth checking out Paul's stuff, even if he is admittedly bad at draft analysis. He does lump himself into one of the categories, so you should go check that blog post out while we're plugging things. Even if you're not a patron, I should mention, too, support us another way. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen to us, and give us a 5-star review. And while you're there, be sure to hit subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. All right. Well, it was definitely an eventful week for the Brewers since, you know, you heard from this gang last. You know, it was the pitching's turn, though, to really step up and win a few games for the Brewers this week. I think, you know, we've been talking that eventually that hot streak of the offense would run out, because you're just not going to keep up that historic pace that the Brewers were on the first couple of weeks. Right. And eventually they had to turn to the pitching to win. And I think specifically, we'll talk about it was the bullpen, because still plenty of short starts from the team, but the bullpen really picking things up. We saw that again this weekend in St. Louis, right? DL Hall went short again, and bullpen helping secure a sweep on Sunday. But let's go back first to the Padres series. So they lost the first two games to the Padres. And I guess if you combine that with the Sunday loss to the Orioles, that was their first losing streak of the season. So, you know, not too bad to get a couple of weeks into the year before your first quote unquote losing streak. But, you know, the Brewers then rebounded, held the Padres and then the Cardinals to 17 scoreless innings in a row before they finally surrendered a lone tying run in the ninth on Friday. You know, Yoel Piamps had to get ready in a hurry, ended up walking in a tying run. They overcame that hiccup, though, won in the 10th for their first extra inning win of the year. And then the offense broke back out on Saturday. That was really nice to see, too, covering for another lackluster DL Hall start, as I mentioned. And then it was once again pitching's turn on Sunday. Colin Ray, another really solid start, going head-to-head with Sonny Gray, who was striking out guys left and right. That was really nice to see Colin Ray kind of go head-to-head. And then it ended up being another shutout, the second shutout in four games. So obviously, pitching really stood out. Bullpen really did their job in covering a ton of innings once again. And then some fine run prevention in the process from the defense. So I guess, Spencer, let's start with you. Who stood out in particular to you this week on the pitching side?
I've got to go with Brian Hudson. I mean, yeah, he has been fantastic so far early in the season. Kind of an under-the-radar pickup from the Dodgers in the offseason. I feel like it went overlooked. He had been DFA'd by the Dodgers. Whenever the Dodgers DFA someone, you kind of have to take it a little differently than if, like, the Royals DFA somebody, because they're always in a 40-man crunch. And I think they kind of knew they were going to trade him, and they just needed to open up that spot earlier, that somebody was going to come around and give them something for him. And the Brewers did give up Justin Chambers, who was their 19th round pick and got a pretty big signing bonus in last year's draft. But thus far, he's gone 11 and two thirds. He struck out 12. His whip is around 0.6, I think, right now. And he's just been fantastic. And this week, he had two different outings of 2 1/3 innings. So he's been able to eat bulk innings, which is a big deal for what the Brewers need right now out of their relievers. And he's been able to do it. It's his third time going at least that deep into a game out of the pen. He was just really, really good. He's only given up one base runner this week. It was one hit allowed. And I mean, that it's a weird profile. It's a guy with 8 feet of extension. He's very tall. He's only throwing 90 to 93, but you can just tell hitters have no idea how to square up that fastball. They are struggling with it badly. And the Brewers kind of saw that profile. I think they tinkered with it a little bit, got the extension to be more consistent. And he's just, he looks dominant right now. He looks like he's going to be a really big piece of the pen all year.
That deception, yeah, absolutely. I remember, like, spring training, one of the first outings I saw from him there, and was really impressed. And I think it was Tim Dillard said he looked like he had, like, an arm growing out of his back in his delivery. It's just that deception, right? And then you mentioned that extension. By the time you realize what's there, you know, that perceived velocity is a lot higher than it actually is.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's been really uncomfortable swings against a 90 to 92 mile per hour fastball that you just don't see very often in MLB.
Yeah, he has been everything that we could have hoped and more. You do worry just like the repeating of that mechanics. It does look like there's so many moving parts to it. And when you have levers that long, how well a guy will repeat that. There's so many pitchers who are that size and larger have had issues like repeating mechanics and getting it into, you know, keeping it on the rails, basically. So we have to hope he can continue to do that. But yeah, every time he comes out now, he just looks absolutely filthy dominating and nobody is touching him. I mean, the hitters today, some of the one that really stood out, Nolan Gorman, I think, took a strike three from him and just looked like hopeless. I mean, it just, there was nothing he was going to do with that. He swung over it. It was maybe a strike, maybe not a strike, but he swung over it and it just, he had zero chance of hitting that baseball. There was just no hope he was ever going to do it. And I think it was basically with two strikes impossible for him to lay off. So when you start seeing situations like that where guys are just completely lost, you know, you've got something in terms of a relief pitcher. And he seems to have an answer for right-handers too. That's always the big thing. You wonder with lefty relievers, how much of it's going to be a platoon thing and how much of it's going to be simply from, you know, same on same. And he does seem to be able to get righties to swing and miss. I don't have the splits up in front of me, but he seems to be able to do that pretty well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess, Ryan, on that front, who stood out to you on the pitching side?
Yeah, Bryce Wilson was really something. The start that he had, which we had no right to expect anything from it, was kind of eye-opening. I went back and rewatched it because I was at work when it happened, when he was actually out there. And I went back and I rewatched it, and he does look like he's something of a different pitcher this year. I think the biggest thing, looking at the StatCast numbers, is, and this has dropped back a little bit, his outing against St. Louis, though shutout, he was fine in that outing. He wasn't generating quite the whiffs and chases that he had been at that point. But his chase percentile is up from, he was 23rd percentile in the league last year in chase. And this year he is now up to 74th percentile. And it was even higher before that run against the Cards. He's still not whiffing batters. And I think, so Spencer, you can help me out on this. Whiff specifically deals with swings and misses inside the zone, correct? Or does it?
It is all swing and miss, but it's just the percentage of the swings total.
Okay, so it's swings total, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in the zones. Whereas chase is how often will a guy swing at a pitch outside the zone, whether they make contact with it or not.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So yeah, generating a lot more chase is really a good thing, something he needed to do. And you're seeing now a spike in his strikeout rate. Again, a little bit down because I don't believe he struck out anybody against the Cardinals on Saturday, but still significantly better than what he was last year. And he's now rocking an almost 19.6%, so almost 20% K minus base on ball. And the fact that he's always been good at not walking guys, this has always been kind of a core strength of what he does. When you start adding just a little bit more miss on that, I think it really does help. And so he is getting guys to miss. I came into this year expecting, you know, a serious regression from him. And instead, what seems to be happening here is he seems to be getting somewhat better. I mean, the hard hit percent is 84th percentile. The barrel percent is 62nd percentile. Walks 87th percentile. He's doing a pretty good job of keeping people off of making hard contact on him. So he can get away with some of this, you know, less than ideal. Like, he doesn't generate ground balls like the way you think he would. He doesn't generate whiffs the way you would, you know, hope a guy would. But he seems to have enough here to be at least a going concern for the Brewers at this point.
Yeah, I think he was one, you know, whether it was in the off season or earlier in the year, we were like, okay, was he just getting lucky last year? Is he like a DFA candidate as like the long man who's got to take, you know, the brunt of the innings burden and may get roughed up as a result of that. But it does definitely look like he's made some adjustments and is kind of showing, you know, he's never going to strike out a million guys, right? But he's at least showing the ability to induce the weak contact, and the defense is always really good behind him. And it's been a really valuable piece, especially with so many starters struggling to go even into the fifth inning. So absolutely. I guess speaking of that, Ryan posted the call for questions on Patreon right in the midst of another subpar DL Hall outing. So a lot of people wanted to talk about that. So let's pivot over to DL Hall and some Patreon questions. Jeremy Nachman, the first one, asking, did DL Hall leave his 80 grade fastball on the plane on his flight to spring training this year? Spencer, in your pitching coach professional opinion, what happened here? Because, like, obviously we were hyped up on the fastball. We were seeing some things like Jacob Mizorowski, DL Hall, the two best fastballs in the minors. He's looked immensely hittable, especially on that pitch. Why?
I don't know that he left it on the plane to spring training. He may have left it on the plane from spring training, though. He had the fastball in spring that he had been throwing with the Orioles. The one StatCast game that he had, it was averaging 95.4 and he touched 97. It had the same characteristics that you were looking for and what he had had with the Orioles. In his last start, it was down a little bit, but he sat 93-95 on the TV gun. I went back and watched his few innings that he pitched in his last start against the Angels in spring. It was not 90-94 at the most like it has been since he got into the regular season. And the issue and the concern for me is the fact that the characteristics are different. The induced vertical break is worse than it was. that is more concerning than the velocity to me, because I think the velo will come around, and we'll talk about, I'm guessing, in the injury that he sustained and whether I wonder if that has been hanging around a little bit and it's not just something that just popped up, because it could explain some of the velocity issues he's had. But right now, the fastball is a 30 grade pitch, and it was legitimately a 70 or an 80 when he was with the Orioles last year, especially out of the pen. But even in the minors, you could look at it and say that's a 60, maybe a 70 on a good day. Like, I don't know where it's gone. And the concern is that you can't notice anything super specific. The axis of the pitch is the same. His extension's the same. So how did he just completely lose the feel for the fastball? I don't know. And in some ways, that gives me a little hope that he's just going to rediscover it, because it might just be a feel thing where he's just a little off. Maybe he's choking the pitch a little bit, gripping it too hard because he's in a new situation. He's trying to do too much. He could be overthrowing a little bit, trying to get the velo, because even in some of his interviews, he's talked about being confused as to where the velocity is. Like, he can't figure out why he's not throwing as hard as he was in spring and as he has in the past. So I don't know what's wrong with it, but it's certainly going to be the thing that kind of makes or breaks whether he can start long term.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple thoughts on this. First off, I did bring up, because I was wondering about this, like, is he just not a starter? Is he trying to pace himself? Is this a case of a guy not being able to, because we were talking about this a lot in the last few weeks with all the pitcher injuries, that whether or not guys are pitching up at their max, and I mentioned this on the show last week, like, DL Hall might be an object lesson in this. And then people pointed out to me that, like, it doesn't really make sense. Like, that explanation doesn't really make sense, because you would think if it was the case that he was holding back, that he would still spike a few. He would find moments where he was rediscovering the old fastball, or would spike it up to around near the max. And he hasn't done that. He's just not capable, seemingly, of getting up to that. So this is one of those weird situations where you're almost, you never like for players to get hurt, but sometimes it almost is like, okay, well, if there's an explanation here, if the injury is the thing, at least that potentially gives you hope that, okay, this might be the reason. And if they can just, if as long as it's minor, and this, you know, doesn't seem to be particularly major at this point, it seems to be, you know, a strain in the knee. So important for pitchers, obviously, but not, you know, you would be get much more scared if this was, we were talking about something in the shoulder or the elbow. So hopefully this is just an explanation as to what's been going on, that something isn't right here. Something physically was not right. It was throwing him off, and he just needs to refine it, because, yeah, what he has shown us so far is not a big league quality starter. And honestly, might not be, like, what we're seeing isn't a big league quality pitcher. Like, no. Just period. Yeah. He's not even, you know, a reliever or something. So hopefully this that gives them pause to go and figure it out and figure out what's going on, and they can move forward. But yeah, this has definitely been a very disappointing start for him. It's going to be interesting to see where they go.
JD on Patreon has a thought that I also did in one of our group chats as I was just rage typing away on Saturday. Ryan can attest to that.
Yes, he did.
JD asking, is DL Hall just Manny Parra better than or less than? Which, man, if you talk about, you know, alleged mid-90s fastballs from the left side, I was still convinced Manny Parra was going to be amazing. But Spencer, that fastball was flatter than flat, and you were kind of mentioning that the break is off. So he kind of needs to rediscover that to avoid becoming Manny Parra, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you combined Ashby and Hall, you could see a Manny Parra type of comp pretty easily, I think. For Hall, it is just going to be the fastball, I think. If he rediscovers it, he'll be fine. I don't think the secondaries have been that bad. The slider's been kind of off and on, but the changeup's actually better than it was with Baltimore. He's made strides with that. And the curves looked okay, too. He's shown flashes with the slider. It just hasn't been commanded very well. But the fastball is what kind of drives all of those pitches. And if you can't throw a good fastball, or a good enough fastball, it doesn't matter if the secondaries are good as a starter, at least. It would give him at least a chance to be a reliever, I think, if it does come down to somehow just losing this fastball that he's had his whole career. But I think you probably still have a little bit more hope for him than Manny Parra, but I get it. I can see where it's coming from in some ways.
Yeah, I always wondered what Manny Parra could have done if there'd been a pitching lab for him to work at and to like change, because he was really, it was a problem with the fastball characteristics, right? It was a fast pitch, but it did not move. It was just straight as an arrow. And so hitters teed off on it. You wonder if
it's 100 green fastball is what it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Green runs it up there a little bit more than what Manny could. But for the era, like from the left side, Manny Parra, that was the thing. He threw so much harder than like any lefty starter that it was like, yeah, this guy's got legitimate, a huge fastball for a lefty starter. And yeah, we just, it never really translated because, yeah, like you said, it was just a very hittable fastball. So you wonder if somebody could have tweaked it. Well, I think they're going to work with Yale Hall. Clearly, the thing that we have going here for us is there's a history and a track record of Yale Hall having good stuff and being able to miss stuff. And we have all the tools at our disposal, the collective we here. The team has all the tools at their disposal that they could possibly want. I feel like they're going to figure some stuff out here and make it better and figure out where to go with this. So this isn't just going to be a, well, we can't figure this out and it's just going to end situation. But this might be a situation where if this it doesn't end up working, what is happening right now doesn't end up working, they might have to do some sort of radical overhaul. And I mean, we saw this with Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns was not the same pitcher coming out of 2019 as he was going into it. Like, he became much more focused on the cutter, and it was just he was kind of a different guy and had a completely different pitch mix coming out of that experience with, you know, just being a soup can for a year in 2019. Who knows? Maybe something like that needs to happen with DL Hall, but I feel much better about the possibility of turning things around now with the world that we live in and the situation we have than, you know, retrospectively looking back at what the chances were for Manny Parra to turn it around.
I guess speaking of those adjustments and what needs to be done, Kevin Stern, our next question on Patreon, asking, after the game Saturday, Murph intimated to Adam McKelvey that he and Hook are looking to, quote, look at next steps and adjustments that need to be made regarding DL Hall. Today, Sunday, he landed on the IL with that sprained knee, as you guys mentioned. What do you think is really going on? So, you know, Spencer,
Brad's conspiracy corner again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, well, they say he sprained the knee fielding a bunt, but if you guys are saying like maybe something's been nagging, maybe this is just the convenient thing to kind of maybe give him a mental break, Spencer, right?
Yeah, I mean, for a guy with an option, I don't know that any team would be willing to do the fake injury bit after Billy Epler got suspended for a year this offseason for fake injury thing. Yeah. I think they might save that for somebody that's non-optionable and they don't really have a choice in it, any other way to get him work outside of MLB. But that kind of is what it comes down to for me, is whether it happened on that bunt and that was the first time anything had been bothering him, or if it's been something that's kind of been bothering him. He didn't think it was a big enough deal to say anything, and then he kind of felt it more on that bunt and decided, all right, I have to go get this looked at. It's clearly bothering me. If it has been a problem for a while, there's a decent chance it's caused some of the issues with the fastball, because that's the drive leg. That's the back leg. It's how he sinks into his back hip and gets into his legs for the pitches. And if you can't do that, that's an easy way to lose a little bit of velocity. You got to use your arm a little bit more, and sometimes that can take off some of the break and the spin that he would have normally gotten. So it would explain some of the issues. That's why I'm in a way hoping it has been bothering him for a while, and I'm hoping that's what the news is that we get.
Yeah, kind of what I was talking about before. This is one of those situations where you kind of do hope it's an injury, as long as it's not a serious one, because it explains so much of what, you know, has gone wrong so far. The thing about the Phantom IL deal at this point is, one thing that we've heard, and I hear this on podcasts all the time and from people that I talk to, like basically every MLB pitcher, and I would assume this would be true, Spencer, down to like the college level, everybody's dealing with something nagging somewhere on their body at various points. Like, nobody's completely healthy once they've gotten into a few, you know, weeks, months of doing this. Everybody's got something, so you can always kind of find something to go, yeah, well, okay, that's a reason to sit out if you're looking for one, right?
100%. Yeah, there's always going to be something you could say, oh, my knee's sore, and boom, IL. And there's no way you can really prove that that's not the case. So you have to be pretty dumb to get caught doing what Epler did, which means he must have just been putting people on the IL that had no pain and they ended up reporting him or something. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, for the most part, you can find a reason to put someone on the IL.
Yeah, that's the weird part, too. And there's another thing, too. It is in the best interest of a player in, say, DL Hall's position. It is better for him to go on the IL because when he goes on the IL, he's pulling a big league paycheck. When he gets optioned down, he's pulling a minor league paycheck. So there's a difference in how much he is getting paid. I don't know how much it is where he is in service time. I know there's like a graded system they use on this now, but it's definitely he's making more by being on the big league IL than he would if he was pitching for the Nashville Sounds. That is that part I definitely know at this point. So there's also, you know, a self-interest part here where guys aren't necessarily opposed to going on the IL because it means they continue to pull a big league paycheck. So, yeah.
All right. Couple more DL Hall questions. Bob Peterson asking about what happens next. So Bob writing, now that Hall is on the IL, it seems as if it is time for Bryce Wilson to continue to start. On Wednesday, he had a starter's arsenal commanding all four pitches as well. Would you agree it might be worth trying to stretch him out as a starter? Ryan, you were high on Bryce Wilson. How far should they stretch him?
Boy, I don't know. I'm hesitating on this one because I think that what he does is so valuable, particularly to this team, particularly how they use him. I would almost rather have them use him in this way. That they are, where you can get 2 to 3 innings from him and, you know, completely like bridge a situation like they had to on Saturday. They probably didn't want to turn to him quite that quickly, only 2 days after he'd thrown, 50 something pitches on Wednesday with only 2 days of rest. But they did, and he was fine. It was a perfectly, you know, cromulent appearance. Everything went well. So, yeah, I kind of hesitate to do that. I think there are other things you can do, which we're going to get into in a moment here. So I'm going to kind of leave some of that. But I would kind of leave him where he's at because I think it works relatively well in that space. And it is one of those I kind of don't want to mess with success situations.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would say the exact same thing. I don't think they should. They might consider it, but I would rather leave him in the role that he's in right now.
All right. Speaking of some alternatives, Tricky Henderson, our next Patreon question, asking Hyunjin Ryu, Vincent Velasquez, Johnny Cueto. No, I'm not forming an international trio of safe crackers, hackers, and card counters for one last big score. Wait, maybe I am. Do we want any of these pitchers to collect innings in 2024? Even though we lit up the cards in the mid-innings on Saturday, DL Hall exiting after 3.2 innings with another hittable appearance, it seems like 2 times a week it could be a Johnny Holstaff. God rest his soul. What do you all think? Great fun season so far. Keep up what you do. So I guess, Spencer, any of those names scream out to you? What other options do the Brewers have if, say, DL Hall is going to be out a while or they need to turn elsewhere?
I believe Ryu signed somewhere overseas again and signed for like 10 years or something. So I think he might be off the table.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He did do a very weird contract. It was something to take the AAV down. He's not going to pitch for 10 more because he's like in his late 30s. But yeah, it was some sort of
he might. You don't know that.
It's a salary cap manipulation thing because they also have a salary cap. So
anyway, so cross him off then. But anyone else speak to you, Spencer?
I've always liked Velasquez's stuff. Like, he's always been interesting to me, and the Brewers seem like a organization that might be able to help him figure some things out. But I'd probably pass on Cueto. I don't know that you're getting much out of him these days. Velasquez, maybe. I think the Brewers actually have some options in AAA that are going to be able to help make starts, and in Robert Gasser probably pretty soon, and Tobias Myers I think should make starts, honestly, for the Brewers at some point here. Jansen Junk is another option. I mean, they've got options, so I don't think they need to go out and get somebody, but I do think you're going to see some different people making starts for the Brewers over the next month or so.
Yeah, so I agree in general with the sentiment, but I would say that if you can get somebody like they got Julio Teheran last year to come in and be in the minors a little bit and like get a look at him and kind of see what they were going to do with him, I would not be at all upset with that. I would be perfectly happy. Go ahead and take a shot at somebody and see if you can find somebody like that. I don't know about paying necessarily for like the biggest name you can get, like some of the, like Johnny Cueto, like getting a name and hoping that that works and just stick him right into the big leagues. But if you can get somebody to work with a little bit, it's going to have to be somebody like with Teron, where they felt like he wasn't getting the most out of what he was doing and that they could just make some small tweaks, you know, make one weird trick. And now we've got, you know, a decent big league starter here. So I think it's more of that sort of thing that they're going to need to look for. So it needs to be the right fit, but they should be definitely looking. And I'm sure they are. They have to be looking, but it's not something you want to force. And it's not something, to your point, that I think you need to force because you do have all the other, these other guys. But I'm going to save that for Nick's question.
Yes. Speaking of, Nick G asking, with the starter injuries piling up, do you think we see a Teron-esque signing in the near future, or is it more likely we bring up someone currently in the system like Ashby, Junk, or Gosser? Funny that Julio Teheran's already been signed by two different teams already this year, the Mets and the Cubs. So he's still with the Cubs. We'll cross him off. But Spencer, you know, what do you think about some of those minor league names? Ashby was rough to start the year, but Gosser might be getting close to coming back.
Yeah, I think Ashby, honestly, I would say this. I think Ashby's further along than I expected him to be this year, but I don't think he should be pitching in MLB for a while. And I didn't like that they brought him up to make that start. I would rather he just kind of stay in AAA and continue to figure out the shoulder and get back to where he is. So I'm hoping they're not considering him for any upcoming starts. I'd like him to just stay in Nashville and keep working on stuff. Gasser, I know, is getting a little closer. He's been in extended spring. He's thrown a little bit. We don't have too much of an update other than that he threw two innings last week. I'd imagine he probably has thrown one other time since then, but we haven't heard anything about it. He is somebody that I expect to be in the rotation at some point this year and to be able to stick in the rotation. So I do think once he's healthy and built back up, we'll see him. Jansen Junk is a name. Tobias Myers, to me, is a guy who should make starts for the Brewers soon, and I mentioned it in the last one, but I think he's ready to start. I'm slightly upset we did not get to see him in that Padres game. I was really hoping to see him on an MLB mound, but I think he should be making a start. Honestly, he's the guy I would line up with the next DL Hall start and give him a chance to go out and be a starter, not the bulk innings guy following Bryce Wilson like we brought him up to be this last time. Like, I want to see him get a start and see what happens, because the fastball's pretty good. It's not huge velo, but it's got really good characteristics. The curveball's made strides. All of the secondaries have made strides. I think he's an MLB starter, and I want to see him get that chance to do so. So of all the names, he's the one I want to see most.
So I have a question for you on this, because everybody's been talking about him. He has been the hot topic. Kurt wrote about him in the JS even before he had made his debut, or before he was officially even on the roster, and he didn't make his debut, I should say. But he's like the new hotness. Everybody's excited about Tobias Myers, and I get that, and I'm not like doubting that. What do you make of this fact that he's been with six different organizations in eight seasons?
I'll say this. I think a lot of smart organizations have tried to get him, meaning the Rays and the Guardians both had their hands on him.
Giants are in there. Yep.
I do notice that when players kind of get moved around between those types of orgs, because that does mean that those teams specifically saw something in him. I think the main thing is that he's only 25 years old, and I think people have kind of he's not much older than like a Robert Gasser is right now. He's younger than, or he's the same age as DL Hall. So you're talking about a guy who isn't actually out of prospect range, but he kind of feels like he is because of, like you said, he's moved around a lot. I mean, he was a minor league free agent when the Brewers signed him, but he was a big prospect at one point, traded for Junior Caminero at one point. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he just has figured things out with the Brewers. And the velo has bumped up from where it was when he signed with the Brewers. Last year in Biloxi, he was sitting 89 to 91 for a good chunk of the season. Now he's sitting 94 in AAA for full starts with the fastball characteristics. It just kind of feels like he finally is putting it together. And like I said, I put value in all those smart pitching organizations seeing something in him at some point.
Yeah, and just the idea that, like, if they keep getting a chance, eventually it's going to click with somebody, and maybe it's a matter of him maturing into, like, understanding who he is as a pitcher and just, like, finally getting it. Maybe that's part of the deal that's going on, because, like you said, he's not old by any stretch. So I'm intrigued, but that was something that immediately caught my mind, where I'm like, I tend to be a little suspicious of guys who bounce from organization to organization, because you wonder, why did somebody like Cleveland, who's very smart and very good with pitching, why did they give up seemingly so quickly on him? I know there are roster pressures and things that kind of dictate things like that. So that is the answer. But there were things they could have done if they truly believed in him, though I guess there were roster crunch issues and all that. So whatever. But yeah, I think we're going to see, hopefully, Gosser. By the way, did you guys see the injury when they actually got in there and determined what had happened with Spencer Strider, what the elbow injury was?
Yeah, it was like bone spurs, like interacting mm-hmm. with the UCL, but it wasn't a UCL tear. Is that similar to what was going on with Gosser's elbow too? I know he had bone spurs.
Like it went free floating and then like nipped at the corner of it or something. And so yeah. they were able to not do the full Tommy John. They did the brace. Mm-hmm. So he is going to be back presumably like for next year's opening day, potentially, because they only had to do the brace. That was my fear when I heard that. And when I'm like,
yeah,
when I was like, I think we talked about it in the chat, maybe, James, where it was like, okay, that's a little spooky. But I mean, you just have to plow through and go forward. There's nothing you can do about it. Everybody is dealing with pitcher elbow issues, like it's just everywhere. So the Brewers have been pretty fortunate. We haven't had too many guys get Tommy John. We've actually had more shoulder issues lately than we have anything else, which is frightening in its own way, but not an inordinate amount there. But yeah, you just have to kind of plow through and go. Keeping away from Ashby would be ideal. I don't know how much flexibility they're going to have to do that. I think we're going to see some Jansen Junk. I think we are going to see Tobias Myers. Obviously, they were ready to have him pitch in the big leagues, so hopefully he is ready to actually come out and do that relatively soon, because it's going to happen here pretty quick.
All right, moving on. Price Trozen asking, the opener as a fifth starter strategy hasn't been a total disaster, but you've said it's probably not sustainable. What or who is the best versus most likely scenario for a cromulent traditional rotation other than an unexpected trade? So any of the names, Ryan, we've mentioned, just slide in fifth and stay there?
Unexpected trade.
Okay.
If you want a cromulent, like, top to bottom five man rotate, like that sort of thing. They don't have that internally right now, though. I guess like Jacob Junis, remember that guy? We brought him in the winter and all of that.
But his scratchy shoulder.
He has the scratchy shoulder, so we worry about that. But anyways, at some point, like they're probably going to be making a trade for a starter, and it sort of comes down to a question of when you do it and who you're trading with. And I'm sure are looking at, you know, all of the bad organizations, all the dumb organizations, and trying to figure out like who do they have that they don't even realize is like kind of good. Who does the Chicago White Sox have that's just like sitting there in AAA that they don't really value and that they could just like poach? Somebody like that is probably what they're trying to look to do here. So I think they're going to be making a trade for pitching. I think that's inevitable.
Spencer, what do you think?
Yeah, for now, I mean, it probably does take a trade to make it a clean, actual rotation for the rest of the year, but it's just the names we've already talked about. Myers, Gasser, all those guys are options to come up and make real starts and at least give you a little bit more of a solid footing in the rotation.
All right, Michael Parr, one last pitching question asking, when does Gosser get called up? When he does, who gets DFA'd? Ryan, any speculation on the roster there?
No, I mean, it's just going to be something that rotates through. I don't know. It's more likely not that somebody gets DFA'd, but somebody gets put on the IL and gets moved to like the 40. So, you know, Jacob Junis moving to the 40 or something like that, if he's not going to pitch for a while. Yeah. Or yeah, sorry, from the 40, yes, to the 60. Yeah, something like that would be more likely. Who gets DFA'd? It's usually, there's usually a roster filler down at the bottom that gets moved on from that. That would be fine. If you want like a specific, like Jared Koenig is currently on the 40-man roster. You know what I mean? So something like that. Taylor Clark might get moved it right now because he's not expected back towards the end of May. Well, that would put him, he's currently on the 15-day IL. He could be moved to the 60, and then that could open up space. So if something like this were to happen, there's lots of different options you could take. It's really not like too big a concern that way.
All right, 40 minutes of pitching talk. Let's move over to the offense, which, as we all expected, is being powered by Bryce Terang and Blake Perkins. So Bill Rabe asking, how much of Terang's hitting success might be due to the extra weight or muscle he put on in the offseason? Don't the players lose weight during the season itself? Spencer, that's an interesting thought. You know, I know plenty of guys have said that they lost weight during the year and you lose mass. So I guess, how does, you know, adding that extra muscle maybe help Bryce Terang?
I'm sure it's helped him. I think really it's just come down to him improving his bat control and whiffing a lot less than he did last year, more than anything else. He is hitting the ball a little bit harder on average. He's definitely a better hitter than he was last year, and I'll be the first to admit that he surprised me quite a bit this year. I was not expecting him to even be an average hitter this year, and I think that's a possibility now. I don't expect him to be a 900-plus OPS guy like he has been so far, but I do think he's a capable hitter right now, and this type of approach will lead him to being decent. In terms of losing weight during the season, I'm sure they do a little bit. They do a lot more, I think, in-season maintenance than they may have done in the past, so there's a lot more lifting in-season than there used to be. Kind of used to be, you know, you get all your lifting in the offseason, and then you play your season, and you don't want to get hurt lifting during the season, but they do a lot more maintenance stuff now and just to try and maintain that mass. So I'm not sure he'll lose much of it, but I'm sure it'll fluctuate a little bit just because of sweating a lot and doing a lot of stuff during games. I mean, like, it's going to be warm in the summer. But I think the success comes down more to the actual improvements with his bat to ball skills and his bat control in general.
Yeah, so he needed to improve on making hard contact, and I'll get to that in a minute, because the outside skills, like, he was really good at not whiffing and not striking out and not chasing even last year. I mean, he's gotten a little bit better in terms of his chase has bumped up a little bit, his whiff is bumped up. He's now 99th percentile in whiff percent, so that's really, really good. All those things have gotten better. Like, he is doing all those things a little bit better. Now, in terms of, like, the rest of it, the biggest thing that I will say is his average exit velocity now is, you know, 43rd percentile, where last year it was second percentile. So he has made a big he's made a big jump on that.
Yeah.
He was fifth percentile in barrels, fourth percentile in hard hit last year. We talked about this. He had the ice cold blue Statcast page, and he just was not making hard contact. And it's gotten modestly better this year. You know, barrel percent is up to 23rd percentile, hard hits 11th percentile. And there's maybe even some room to grow here, because he's actually hitting the ball less on the sweet spot this year than he did even last year. So that was where I was like his sweet spot percentage last year was almost 50%. This year it's down to 25%. So maybe if he starts making a little bit more contact on the sweet spot, you're going to really start to see like the hard hit numbers and the barrel percent. Like, that stuff's going to go up even further, and that could drive real improvement as opposed to what we've seen so far, which I think, like, today's ball that snuck up the middle in the seventh for him today, which was a big part of them, you know, ultimately winning that game. He was the second run in the game that came in. You know, that was just a pure lucky hit that bounced through an infield, and he got lucky on it. And you're going to have a certain number of those. That's going to be a certain amount of what you do, but you can't count on that. You need to start driving baseballs, and we need to see still more of that for me to really buy in on Bryce Terang. I'm getting there. I'm feeling better again about him, but I'm still not totally bought in.
Yeah, I should say, I forgot to mention the word fastball in this. The whiff thing is he completely has stopped whiffing on fastballs. Last year he was at 20% against fastballs, which was amongst the worst in baseball. And this year it's down to 6, which is a huge difference. And when that's the pitch you see about 60% of the time, the fact that you stopped whiffing on it, that makes a bigger difference for him. But yeah, it is nice to see him hitting harder, the ball harder on average too, for sure.
Yeah, what do you suppose accounts for that? Why does a guy get suddenly better at, say, hitting a fastball, which you think would sort of be the thing that guys would come up through the minors working? Mostly guys in the minor leagues, they have fastballs. Like, that's what they all kind of have. It's a question of, can they locate it and do they have anything else? So it doesn't seem like seeing fastballs at the big league level is necessarily the thing you're not seeing. It's more the other stuff that is the jump when you get to the big league level.
Yeah, you got me there. I have no idea why he's doing it. That's why I didn't think there was any chance he was going to hit this year, is because I was like, well, if you can't hit fastballs, you're not going to hit. But apparently he can now.
Yeah, all the dads and the uncles are just yelling. It's because he's choking up now, you know, so he's getting the batter on quicker. I love that they were talking about that on the broadcast. Anyway, I mean, it's great that he is, like, at least hitting a little bit more power. Yeah, like, you'll have the lucky hits like he had on Sunday, but then he also shoe-topped a homer at Busch Stadium, which is, like, very hard to do. Busch is one of the best pitcher's parks in baseball. So, you know, you have those flashes, and you can kind of see, Ryan, you mentioned, like, Keith Law and others were like, there's 10 to 15 home runs in him if the body projects, right?
Oh, so I don't that know. Keith Law comment that I've held on to like a a comfort blanket for the last, like, 3-4 years with my Bryce Terang love. Yeah, I had to hold on to that one forever. But yeah, maybe it does manifest. And, like, it's not a surprise that a guy would get stronger from his age 23 to 24 season. That's right. What guys tend to do. They tend to, you know, get bigger and get stronger. And, like, they start to come into their, as Ben Sheets called it, their man weight. So, yeah.
Exactly. All right. Real quick, one more Bryce Terang question. Devin Bearwolf is asking, if Terang can manage to be league average this year, do you think the Brewers make him their second baseman of the future or trade him when his value is at its highest at the end of the season? So I should specify league average hitter, because obviously he's been phenomenal defensively. But I guess, Spencer, do you see him playing himself back into the team's plans? It seemed like they were kind of building contingencies if he wasn't the guy before this season.
I think if they believe the league average hitting is sustainable long term, then yes, they should make him their second baseman of the future, because if he's a league average hitter, he's a very, very, very good second baseman overall. I mean, that's a talking 3-4 war player on average if he's a league average hitter, because of the defense and the base running he's going to give you. So if they think it's real, then yes, they should. If they don't think it's real and some team comes calling and offering way more than they should, then yeah, they should go out and trade him. But I think if he does have a league average year, it probably is going to look pretty real based on what we've seen so far. So if he does it, I have no problem with them making him part of their future plans, which I don't think I would have said a month and a half ago, but yeah, that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, so I think that all makes a lot of sense. One thing to know about Bryce Terang, and this is one of the ugly economic sides of baseball things, is he's going to be a good player to take through ARB, because so much of his value is coming on the defensive side, and they just don't do a very good job of paying players for stuff like that. And because his offensive numbers aren't going to be as good, especially, you know, he's never going to be a big home run hitter. He's never going to be a big RBI guy. And those things are how players tend to get paid in the arbitration process. I think he's going to be a relative discount in arbitration too, which might make him a player that they would be, you know, looking a little bit harder at, you know, even if he is more of a rotational player, not necessarily an everyday starter, but a guy that we're happy to have playing 300 to 400 plate appearances a year, being a defensive replacement, something like that. They'll be happy as a clam to do that, because it's just not going to cost them that much money to do it once you get to arbitration with them. So there's that aspect as well.
Moving on to the other X factor on offense, Blake Perkins. Jay Google, our next question this week, asking how big of a surprise has Blake Perkins been for the crew? Ryan, obviously, you know, he showed some, like, similar to Terang, some defensive value last year, but I don't think anybody ever anticipated him being a good offensive piece, and he's been really good lately.
Yeah, so we were talking about this on Twitter a little bit today, and I think he is on the heater of his career right now offensively. And there's any real reason to think that he's now a, I don't know, MVP level player, which is what, you know, essentially that 968 OPS along with his center field defense would make him. You know, if he were to do this for a full season, that's an MVP candidate. So I don't think there's any particular reason to think that he is that, but like you said, we saw the defensive value last year. We understood that his defense was really, really good. The Brewers understood this when they signed him. They got this guy who's a great defender, who that they clearly look at and like some of his offensive upside. And he's doing some things this year better than he did last year. We don't really have a huge sample to go on, but like there was a lot of blue on his Statcast page last year, especially in things like hard hit and those sorts of things. This year, it's looking a lot more red, which is good, and that's what you want to see. So he's doing some things here that are legitimate. But yeah, I mean, he is on an all-time heater at the moment, and you just don't expect that to last. But the fact that he has the defensive floor to fall back on makes him an incredibly valuable player. And this is why, Spencer, I was so glad you found the tweet from when the Brewers signed him. And going back to all the people saying, who's that guy? Who's he? And then all of the various insults and complaints and all that stuff. And it's like, this is why you do, like, go out and sign people like Blake Perkins to be your depth, because if you catch him at the right moment, they can give you an incredible run. Like you're seeing, you can catch something like this. The trick with something like Blake Perkins is not to let it overstay its welcome. The way, say, they got an all-time heater from Owen Miller last year in May, and they were still playing him on basically a daily basis in like early July. And that's something that was more driven by like just need and the fact that they were dealing with a lot of injuries. And so, and like, Rowdy Tellez was bad and then hurt and all of that stuff. You don't want that situation, but sometimes you fall into it. But the ideal thing here is to get your heater and then to have him go back to being more of a, you know, fourth outfielder type.
Excuse me, who won the game for the Brewers on Sunday? Remind me of that again, Ryan.
You mean with the single?
Wisconsin native Owen Miller.
Oh, yes. I thought we were talking about Perkins still. I'm like,
No.
Perkins scored the winning run, I think, didn't he? I think it was Perkins and then Terang. Yeah, it's all the guys. It's all those guys.
It's all these guys.
Yeah, it's all those guys were the ones involved in the winning runs against the Cardinals. But yeah, this is one of those things you want to. There's something about this in Moneyball. Billy Beane was talking about this with, I think it was like John Mabry maybe on his team, where he like traded him at like the peak of his value. I don't know that you necessarily need to trade Blake Perkins, because again, he's not expensive. It's not like there's a lot of value here. It's fine to just keep him around. But you also don't want to like rely on him past the point where it's no longer clicking, and that will come relatively soon.
Sure. I guess a somewhat similar question from Adam Post asking, is Blake Perkins the odds on favorite for National League MVP this season? On a more serious note, have the Brewers unlocked something in his bat, or will he soon revert to last year's model? I did see a tweet noting that the major league leaders for Fangraphs WAR among center fielders, Mike Trout and Blake Perkins, both tied at 0.8. So there you go. He's on an MVP pace, Spencer. But I guess how quick does he, you know, turn back into the pumpkin?
Yeah, Ryan touched on most of what I was going to say here. It's something where you ride it out while it's happening, and you absolutely, he should be in the lineup every day while it's happening right now. And as soon as you start to see it fall away, and you give it a couple days, obviously, maybe a week of poor performance before you overreact to it being over, but he's not somebody that should just be slotted into the lineup moving forward and you just expect him to be part of your future in the outfield. I do think his profile fits perfectly as a fourth outfielder, though.
Yeah.
Because of the defense, because he's a good base runner, he's fast. He's somebody that can come in, play all three outfield positions. You don't really have to move things around to bring him into a game. But when he's in center field, I know the Brewers view him as the best defensive outfielder in baseball. That's what they said last year at one point. They think he's the best defensive outfielder in the entire league. And, I mean, you could argue he won the game today with his three-run home run robbery because that would have been the difference in the game. So it's awesome to watch him play center. It honestly is. It reminds me of Lo Kane in a lot of ways because it's so nonchalant and it looks like he's bored out there and he's just making plays that nobody else makes and he's doing it with what looks like it's just boredom when he's doing it. And it's impressive to watch. But in terms of the bat, he's actually chasing more. He's swinging more this year. And I think there had to be a little bit of an uptick in like the aggressiveness at the plate. Last year, it just kind of felt like he was searching for walks, searching for just, I mean, he's just taking a lot of pitches, and that meant he took the hittable pitches as well. And the walk rate's way down, the chase rate's way up, but a lot of the other things have improved too. And if he can kind of find that middle, like I said, I think he's a perfect fourth outfielder and a guy you want on your roster moving forward. If obviously there's a lot of outfield depth for the Brewers, so it can make it difficult, but for the most part, he makes the most sense in that role, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting when, obviously, first Yelich comes back and then when Garrett Mitchell comes back. I think he might find himself on the outside looking in terms of the roster. But by that point, he's probably cooled off. So if he hasn't, then you know what? These are good problems to have. This is the definition of a good problem to have. So just, you know, you play it one day at a time, and good Lord willing, the players will sort themselves out.
All right, moving on. Michael Heitkamp, our next question, saying Oliver Dunn has cooled off. If Birkins keeps hitting like this, should they revisit Frelick at third once Yelich returns, or should they just play Ortiz more? We did get the first official Sal Frelick at third base experience this past week. So I guess, Spencer, how do you see that shaking out, or should they just play Joey Ortiz more?
I would say in general, I'd love to see Ortiz over there a little bit more, but I do also see the appeal with with Dunn still. I know that the whiff rate's higher than I expected it to be. I'll say that for sure. I think he's walking less than I thought, but he isn't chasing. He hits the ball relatively hard. It's been going down, but you can see an approach from him that I like, and the defense has been way better than I expected. He's grading out extremely well defensively at third base. The arm's been better than I expected. He's in the 95th percentile for sprint speed. Like, you can see why Dunn is getting opportunities, but I wouldn't hate to see him go down to AAA and get some experience at the upper levels of the minors, where he kind of only played in AA last year and came straight to the majors. I'm not going to give up on Oliver Dunn. I still see something with him, but I don't know that he's completely ready for MLB. So I'd love to see Ortiz get more time. And I do think if Perkins continues to hit, then sure, when Yelich is back, maybe you do try and get Frelick a little bit more time at third base and see if it works. It wasn't that bad in spring, and it actually looked possible, more than I expected it to. So I could see it being a possibility, but I don't know that you really start planning for it now, because like we just talked about, the odds of Perkins continuing to hit like this and even having to worry about that when Yelich comes back are pretty slim, I would say.
Yeah, I lean all of those ways as well. I would like to see Ortiz get more time, but there is something to be said too for right now. They're showcasing him really against pitchers that he can hit. And because he's just facing, you know, really pitchers that are a favorable matchup to him, he's beating the snot out of him right now. He's got like a 140 something OPS plus. Like, he's really, really doing well. There will come a time to take the training wheels off of him. But I don't know if it's just yet. I think that, again, good problem to have. You have too many players who are doing well. You got to kind of find space for all of them. And when the guys start coming back from injuries, you're going to sort this out. So it's not really a huge concern to me. I still think Frelick's future's in the outfield, though, primarily.
All right. Still a handful of questions to get through. Steve S. The next one asking, looking at Fangraphs as of writing this, the Brewers have done 16 promotions, e.g. Weimer, Ashby, Bukauskas, etc. That puts them as being tied at sixth most in the majors, tied with the Yankees, Nationals, Dodgers, Marlins, White Sox, and the Rangers are ahead. How does this number fare with what you expected heading into the season, and where do you think they will end up? So they've clearly been active, Ryan, so far, but they've always typically been kind of on the upper end of these, you know, quick transactions, right?
As the late, great Dennis Green once said, they are who we thought they were.
Yeah, I mean, there's limits on how many times relievers can go up and down, but Brewers are going to brewer, right? And they have that depth. That's like one of their strong assets.
Yeah, exactly. This is what we do. This is who the team is. This is what they're built to do. This is what they're built around doing. And yes, that's why it was a little bit weird that Tobias Myers coming up and then going right back down without that burns one of his trips. Yeah. You know, So that does kind of suck. But yeah, I mean, they're just going to do this. They're going to keep shuffling guys up and down because they use their whole 40-man roster. They use their injured list. They run the whole thing. So, yeah.
I will say I've been mildly busy in the last week. I wonder why. But I did turn a game on and go, when the hell did Joey Weimer get called up? So, you know, like, it is active enough where, like, if you're not paying attention, you might miss one or two of these. Or, like, oh, they got sent down. I didn't even realize they were on. But, you know, this is just the Brewers that we've come to know over the last few years. Mm-hmm. All right, Ian Pomplin, our next question. Will Gary Sanchez turn the batting around? What's he need to change? He's always been, you know, kind of streaky, right? But this is kind of the Gary Sanchez experience. He's going to hit low 200s, but he'll turn around and hit a bomb every once in a while, right, Spencer?
Yeah, I think in limited playing time, this is the type of output you can get because he just – this is kind of how it goes. It's going to be a streaky thing, and he hasn't hit that much. So, one, that hasn't really given him a chance to get into a rhythm at all, which makes it kind of hard. And then, two, you're kind of getting a downturn of his streaks right now, and that can turn around pretty quickly. But in terms of his swing, I think it looks fine. I don't really see anything I'm worried about with the swing or anything right now. I think he was a little out of shape when he showed up, but I think he's kind of worked his way back into looking a little bit more like you would expect, and I'm not super worried about that. So I think he'll end up hitting. If he doesn't, there's going to be other options around too.
Yeah, he got a late start because of the injury thing, right? And he signed kind of late and then got a late start due to the injury stuff. So you would sort of expect a slow start. Now, James, this week, Steve Anderson sent us a thing. You remember this? Did you not see this? Okay, you maybe didn't see it. Okay, so I'm pretty sure it was Steve Anderson sent us this thing, and he was looking at the deserved runs created on the team. And when I opened it up, he said it was like, if you open this up, you will see you're going to have to look like at this. You could take like 10 guesses and you wouldn't get who's leading the team in deserved runs created plus. And it was Gary Sanchez. He is now down to fifth on the team. He has a 112, which is the same as coming into Sunday, which is the same as Bryce Terang, one behind Rhys Hoskins at 113, and just, 13 behind Christian Yelich with the team lead at 125. So Gary Sanchez has been at least somewhat unlucky at this point in what's going on. I think that you definitely have to be patient here. We've seen him already murder a baseball. Like, we saw him absolutely hit a tank. It's coming. It's going to be there. Gary Sanchez is a guy, like you said, there's a lot of streakiness in the game, but you're going to want to ride this out. And right now, he isn't getting a lot of plate appearances because William Contreras is playing basically every day behind the dish. And so it's not opening up a ton of space for Gary Sanchez, but the time is going to come when you are going to be glad that they didn't get rid of Gary Sanchez. It is coming.
So on that note, the cheese for Wilson Contreras is wine has our next question asking, I'm not saying now, but there has to be some point where the team dumps Sanchez for Haas if the lack of production continues, right? So, Ryan, you want to continue your thought there? You just want to I would rather bet on Gary Sanchez than Eric Haas being a major league contributor, right?
Yeah, I mean, Eric Haas has a lot to recommend him, and I'm very happy that he is our third catcher and that he is down in AAA. Like, both of those things are kind of the ideal state of this situation. Looking at what he's done in the minors so far this year, tick, 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 come on. Looking at what he's done, 256, 356, 535, he's hit three home runs. He's doing relatively well here. He's doing fine for Nashville. That's all good. I'm perfectly happy to have him be the backup sitting there waiting in the case that somebody gets hurt, because, you know, we're not likely to go through all of the season like we did last year with two catchers, because that basically doesn't happen. So I'm perfectly happy for Eric Haas to be depth.
All right, Steve S., another question. Jesse Winker has already accumulated 1.1 baseball reference war with a 345 batting average, two home runs, and 20 hits. A reasonable conclusion is he's healthy. I'm going to come across perhaps sounding overly critical here, but given Devin Williams' critique of them, is it possible the Brewers' medical staff is subpar, or at least subpar at identifying when injuries are actually serious? So I guess, Spencer, what's your take on this? Obviously, you know, Jesse Winker was just sort of a mess physically the last couple of years. Neck, back issues are not what you want as a hitter. So it's perfectly reasonable to me that maybe a couple of seasons is what it takes to get back to form. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's all it really comes down to here, is he's two off seasons removed now from his neck surgery and knee surgery. I believe he had the same.
Yeah. Like I said, he was a wreck. Yeah.
It was a mess, and the Brewers took a chance on it being something that he could recover from quicker. And it didn't happen. And you could see it. It was bothering him the whole year. You could see he wasn't in the same shape that he is right now. Like, he looks like a different guy if you see him in any of the videos of his homers that you're seeing on Twitter and all this stuff. I missed Devin Williams critiquing this medical staff. I don't know that I heard about that. So in terms of if they're subpar at identifying injuries, I doubt it. I don't know that that's something that an MLB staff would be allowed to have happen for a stretch of years without being replaced. I'm sure they've maybe been a little bit hesitant to diagnose something. And we saw it with Devin, where they didn't see the back problem, and then he got a second opinion and there's the fractures. But I doubt that they're a problem of any kind. It would be pretty surprising if they were. But in terms of Winker, he is a guy that I was probably in the very large minority. I don't know if that's the right wording, but I was in the minority on bringing him back, but I was pretty okay with the idea of bringing him back on a prove it deal. It would be hard to fit him into this roster, especially after the Hoskins and the Sanchez and all that stuff. But I did think that a year further removed from it gives him a chance to figure things out. And as much as those playoff at bats made everybody upset, I actually thought that was the best his bat speed looked the entire season in those swings, and it gave me a little hope. So I was thinking, like, if it's a cheap deal, and that's what he ended up getting, obviously, but I would have been fine with it. But either way, I'm actually kind of happy to see him succeeding. I think he handled everything really well last year with everything going on. So
yeah,
I know the team liked him, and that was kind of a concern coming into it. Was like, oh, he might be a clubhouse issue, and it seemed like everybody loved the guy. So I'm happy to see him succeeding on a team that's not very good and isn't going to kill the Brewers very often. So good for Winker.
Yeah, same. I think that these are two completely different situations. They got Jesse Winker knowing exactly what was wrong with him, and that he had just had surgery on two, you know, major parts of the body, mm-hmm. and that he was going to have to recover from that, and that there was probably going to be some time involved in that. And they just were a year early on this, right? Like, it's too bad that they were a year early on it, but they were a year early on it. But they went into that with their eyes completely open as to what the potential problems were. It was just a question of he hadn't had enough time to recover from, you know, multiple major surgeries at that point. The Devin Williams thing, just to, you know, because we talked about it on here a little bit, Spencer, at one point. Basically, yeah, he was really mad. He said something about he was happy to get in front of doctors who knew what they were looking at to diagnose his back issue, was the comment he made to Kurt and the rest of the media when that happened. So he was
really upset. Which could have just been, I'm seeing a specialist, or it could be between the lines. And I think a lot of us maybe read between the lines.
Yeah. It makes sense that him and Hader were friends then, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I mean, Devin is a guy that has some fire. Like, there's some fire in that belly. Like, he could get fired up. And I think, that I don't know how much. It's one of the things at the time what I said, and I'll say it again, like, specialists exist for a reason. You go to them when the regular doctors are like, I don't know, like, this is a strange situation. That's when you go to a specialist, and that's fine. That's what they're there for. So that's, you know, it's fine.
All right. A couple of questions about a notable incident over the weekend where I guess you could call it a tackle from Wilson Contreras to Freddie Peralta, although it was more like a low, slow motion, like, tackle drill, trying to tackle the circle dummy. Anyway, my only lemonade's asking, the whole Wilson Contreras hugging slash tackling Freddie Peralta at the plate on Friday sure was a weird scene. What was the deal there? I feel like the fans were robbed of some beef. Are the Contreras brothers interfering with a healthy rivalry? And then we've got Lucroy Suitcase asking, we have Greg and then Wilson Contreras. So who are some of the other heels or potential heels in the division for me to root against? It feels like many of the best have left in recent years. I kind of had that feeling, like, usually I hate watching Cardinal series because there are just so many guys I can't stand watching. But it's like Goldschmidt just looks old, Arenado's getting there too. It was just like, it didn't have the same feel, Spencer, outside of that weird Wilson Contreras thing. So I don't know. What's your take on those and the whole Freddie incident?
Yeah, honestly, I felt like Wilson Contreras helped out Freddie with how he went into home.
Yeah,
I think he may have cost himself a run with the way he did it. He almost looked like he was trying to avoid just taking him out completely, and that's why he went for the hugging slash whatever you want to call it motion. Taking Freddie down actually probably does help him in terms of, like, you hit the knee and he stays on his feet, it's more likely to buckle and go backwards and something like that. But taking him down, it's not really going to get stuck in the ground like that. So I think he was trying to help him by doing what he did and trying not to take him out. But it is weird not having people I hate in the division.
Right.
I really don't have anyone. I mean, it's Craig Counsell that I really don't enjoy right now. And pretty much, I mean, I can't think of anyone. Even Wilson Contreras, I actually like more as a Cardinal than I did as a Cub, oddly enough. Weird. So
yeah, I'm with you.
Maybe it is the brother thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I can nominate somebody here for it. But first, sure, I want to go over some of this other stuff. So yeah, that wasn't an interesting thing, but there doesn't seem to be. Maybe it is the fact that they're brothers and they're the catchers of the team, so they're kind of the team leaders, that just is like taking the edge off of that thing. But yeah, I feel like that would have gone very differently had it been Yachty. So
yeah.
Like, I just that just, it doesn't seem like that would have happened the same way. It would have played out the same way. So yeah, so maybe there's something to that. And yes, you're like, clearly Craig. And by the way, the heat is getting turned up. It's bad we don't have Noonan here to talk about this right now, because the heat is turning up in
Chicago. I love the Chicago media reports from Paul.
Yeah. About, what's going on with Craig, because people are starting to get edgy about what's going on. Even though the Cubs aren't off to like a bad start, they're
it's off April to 21st.
Well, and they're off to a perfectly fine start. It's like they're not sitting there like 10 games under 500 or something. They're right around 500, I think, right now. So it's perfectly
a little above,
a little bit above. Yeah, they're perfectly fine. It's just not, you know, great. But anyways, people are getting very upset about that. But no, my nominee here is that I think of this because I was talking to a friend about it. He was talking about Ellie De La Cruz, who I was like, oh, everybody's like all excited about Ellie. And then I looked, do you realize that Ellie De La Cruz now is up to like over a one OPS and is just like murdering baseballs left and right?
Yeah. He was homerless for a while and got up the schneid against the Brewers, I think, and he's just gone on a binge since then. Yeah.
And so early in his career, he does seem to love torturing the Brewers. So like instantly, this is the Reds' revenge for years of Christian Yelich torturing the Reds and Bill Hall, which actually was just revenge for Brandon Phillips. But whatever, we don't need to go that far back into this. But no, and he was like, he described, he's like, Ellie De La Cruz, when he walks to the plate, is terrifying. Like, he's huge.
And he's a large human.
He's going to murder baseballs. and you're just like scared, oh my God, this guy could just like, he could do anything to us. He could take us and crush him, or, you know, crush us with like his bare hands. Like he is just, he is a terrifying presence, you know, as a massive human being and also one who can run faster than just about anybody else in baseball. Yeah, he is terrifying. And so that's a different thing than like hating. I think we all had kind of a grudging respect for like Albert Pujols. We didn't like him. We didn't like the attitude, the Prince Albert high and mighty attitude got very annoying, but we hated Yachty because of like the fact that he was, he always hit well against the Brewers and then against nobody else. Like he would hit like 4 of his 8 home runs a year would come against the Brewers. And so it was that situation. The Ellie De La Cruz thing is probably going to be more like Albert Pujols, where you're like, yeah, this guy's legitimately a great player, but man, it just always tortures us. So, and he does it with a flair and a style that is going to make a lot of people very angry too. So there's also that aspect to things.
Yeah, I think you need stakes for that to kind of come up, right? Because the reason why we feel so strongly about the Cubs and the Cardinals is, you know, those late September games or the playoff series where then it's like the David Ecksteins of the world that are screwing you over, right? And that's where you get frustrated. So, yeah, I can't wait to hate Nico Horner for some reason, but that's probably what's going to happen. You know, like it's not going to be the Seiya Suzukis of the world or the Ellies, or I was going to say Spencer Steer, but he was a good prospect in his own right. So Matt McClain, that's the guy that I'm going to end up hating probably.
Yeah, you know? Matt McClain has good potential for that. I think over on the Pirates, because the Pirates are getting to be better kind of rapidly here, especially, you know, the pitching side. I think we're going to see Skeens before too long. And Jared Jones has just been a revelation to this point. But like on the Pirates side, O'Neill Cruz seems like he could kind of be, I think we're going to get crushed by Cruises for a while here, whereas both like Ellie and De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz, like both of those guys seem to have, because O'Neill Cruz has hit some bombs against Milwaukee. I know that. Oh, yeah. So I think both of them, like we might have, crushed by Cruises for a while here.
The Cruz twins. Yeah, no.
And they're both huge human beings, right?
Yes, like yes. Massive, and that was the funny dudes. Thing is, like, O'Neill was the year ahead, and then he got hurt, and then Ellie kind of overtook him.
But yeah, no, O'Neill makes Ellie look small, and that's remarkable.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that'll do it for questions this week. Thank you, everybody, for writing in on patreon.com/mketailgate. Again, $2 a month. Make sure you get your question answered here on the podcast. We also give a shout out to new patrons. And who do we have joining the group this week, Ryan?
Yeah, first one in a couple weeks here. Jacob Wendt has joined up. And if you are in any way related to George, you know, hit us up with that in the DMs, and we can maybe get a chance to meet Norm, because that would be fantastic. I would love nothing more than to share a beer with Norm. That'd be absolutely great.
What are the odds? We'll see. Yeah. I know Paul had a Detmer that wasn't related to the famous Detmers on the football side. That was a bummer. But no, regardless, even if you don't have a famous family member, Jacob, thank you for joining up again.
Anyway, yes.
Again, it's not purely transactional here. No. So thank you so much.
Our appreciation is not transactional. It's not unconditional. It's not conditional.
I mean, you do get the thank you once you give us money. So I guess it is transactional. But yeah, anyway, $2 a month, that's all it costs you. So there you go. reminder to question priority, both on this podcast and on reporting as eligible. Spencer, thanks for hanging out with us this weekend and talking Brewers. And can't wait to hear you and Jack Stern do it again.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That'll do it for this week. Another good one for the Brewers. We'll hopefully see them, you know, keep up that momentum going forward. Whatever happens, we'll be back here next week to talk about it. So stay well, everybody. Enjoy your weeks, and join us next time here on Milwaukee's Tailgate.